Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, April 29th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Producer of the film The Apprentice speaks about Trump's narratives and problems getting the film distributed in advance of the 2024 election. And Volunteer Center Director at the Moscow Food Co-op, Sandra Kelly, on food. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Moscow City Council member Sandra Kelly, who manages the University of Idaho Volunteer Food Center and Vandal Food Pantry, gave a presentation on ways the community is helping meet the needs of those who are facing food insecurity. She was speaking to the Moscow League of Women Voters this afternoon. Kelly started by discussing the lives of people who are food insecure in Idaho and Latah County.
Federal poverty level was 10% of Idaho households financially insecure. Well, that doesn't seem, I mean, that's hard. We don't want anyone to be, but that doesn't seem so bad. It's a little, but seems like something we should be able to help and take care of, except that, oh, don't fail me now. There we go. Got carried away. Except that the study did not account for an additional 31% of households that were also experiencing financial hardship. They had some money, but barely scraping by, or maybe not quite scraping by. So that didn't come into it. These households struggled with limited and strained income, and they couldn't afford their basic needs. And when you have to make those decisions, heat, food, what do you do? Right? That's hard. What's that, Lauren? Right? I know, it's staggering. And I can say that this would have floored me a lot more had I read this before I was on city council. And before I helped get the West Side Food Pantry going, and before I started putting together the Vandal Food Pantry. I know for me, so I'm only going to speak for me right now, I always knew there's a problem. Right, I always knew that it's harsh. I always knew that there are people out there struggling, and you do things. You do food drives, or you do a clothing event, and you try to do those little things, and those are great. And you think, hey, all right, we've helped, and you have, but 41% in Latah County, and that sometimes means you don't have, maybe you have food, but not very nutritious food. You may have some heat, but not really enough heat to stay warm, just enough heat to be okay. If you live out in the county, you probably have to buy more gas, and there's nothing you can do about that if you need to get to work. So you're spending money on things that seem like you just are throwing them out, like gas. You're not buying clothes, right? That's tough. Even at some of the discount stores or at some of the Goodwill stores, you might not even be able to afford that. You are just, 41% are trying to figure out, where's my money going to go this month? And I have watched enough students go through this who are like, okay, I have enough clothes, and I'll go to the food pantry, and I have some money to get into school, but I got to get these books, and I still have rent, and I still have utilities, and I still have all these things I have to pay for. How are you going to do it? And so you skip things. Like, 1 month you'll pay your rent. And the next month, you might be behind on that, but you talk to your landlord and say, oh my gosh, my paycheck's coming in late. Sorry, I'll get that to you. So then you spend your next paycheck paying for utilities, and then you don't pay your utilities the next month because you got to pay your rent, right? And it's a domino effect. And how in the heck are you going to get through school doing that? How in the heck are you going to get through supporting your family if you're trying to do that? It's hard. It happens. I would say it's impossible, but it's not. It's not impossible. But it's miserable. And I think we can help a little bit. So ALICE, Assisted Living Income Constrained Employed, and I think I had to look it up again because I knew what ALICE was, but I couldn't tell you what it stood for. And it just talks about households that earn above the federal poverty level but still don't earn enough. So in our county, housing, food, transportation, healthcare, boy, that goes by the wayside. Right? Absolutely. Food, transportation, healthcare, childcare, technology, taxes, and basic miscellaneous expenses. So I look at this and I'm like, okay, housing, As a single person, I can probably couch surf for a while if I have to. But if I have a family, that's not going to work. Maybe grandparents live in the area and they can help out. Maybe they don't. So household huge. You have to have a place to have a roof. Food, that's something that, you know, you might be able to scrounge around a little bit. And so maybe you put that one over in the I'll take care of that later category. Transportation, boy, you got to get to work. Maybe you have a buddy and maybe you chip in some gas now and then, but maybe your buddy's also struggling and you have to figure out how to get back and forth to work. Sometimes you're on your bicycle and it's a blizzard. Too many people, I mean, anyone is too many, been using their bike to get to work, and it might be a snowstorm, it might be a rainstorm, and they might get hit by a car and no one knows it. They might freeze to death out in the middle of the field because they were hit by a car. I have a friend that happened to within this year. And he has to visit Vandal Food Pantry, and he's 32 years old. Healthcare, oh gosh, that way goes out the window, right? You're like, oh, well, yep, I'm sick. Too bad. I'll wear a mask because I can probably make that out of something because I don't want to get other people sick. But you're not going to be thinking about your high blood pressure medication. You're not going to be thinking about your birth control pills. You're not going to be thinking about even your cold medicine at that point. And so that goes off. You hope you can get it later. Childcare, I know that folks try really hard to get their child care and take care of them. So you know what? If you have any food, it's going to your kids. You're not taking care of you. You're trying to make sure they have everything they need and struggling and worrying all the time. Technology, you hope the schools have some, but you probably don't have a computer for your child, right? Because if you need food, there's no way you're spending money on a laptop, even a rebuilt one. You hope there might be some grants and good organizations out there that help with that, and there are a lot of those out there, including this one here that I'm speaking to and a part of.
That's Sandra Kelly. Kelly spoke about how to find the Vandal Food Pantry. As a recent longtime member of the board of the nonprofit Inland Oasis, she also spoke about how the West Side Food Pantry came about.
You have to go to the Student Rec Center and look diagonal across the street, and you're going to see Big Smoke and Mod Pizza. And they're like, yeah. I'm like, go to Big Smoke in the back. And they look at me, I go, just trust me on this. You got to just trust me. The food pantry's in the back of Big Smoke. And I have a lot of international students, which is delightful. And they'll look at me, because they know I'm a safe person. I'm happy to talk about anything with them. And they're like, I had one young man from Nepal. He said, Sandra, we're not supposed to smoke. I'm like, I'd be great if you didn't. Boy, I would love it if you didn't smoke. Why is there food in a smoke shop? And I said, I love that you put that together. I go, actually, Big Smoke is just a tiny little part, and there's a big wall up there. I go, I probably shouldn't tell you this, but the part that's the food pantry used to be a doggy daycare center. And he went, what? I go, it's okay. We worked really hard to get it all cleaned up, and we worked really hard to get it all cleaned up. I go, but go there. Check it out. They you can always come to the Vandal Pantry and get food, but if you need more, go there also. They expect you to come there. So I love that we're close. I love that the West Side Food Pantry is sort of, we don't really have a middle of town in Moscow exactly, but it's kind of close to the middle. It's easy to get to, and I'm thankful for that. I know they struggle with volunteers. You have to go through a training. It's not an intensive training, but you have to go through a quick training at the West Side Food Pantry to volunteer there. They're great folks. They take care of truly our whole community, not just through food, but through events and care and opportunities. So I can't say enough good things about Inland Oasis. During COVID, Kathy and Tabitha would head over to Safari Pearl, take care of some stuff. It was a good time to like change your store and spruce things up. And there would be boxes of food out there. So they started putting up a food bin, I think. I can't remember exactly what they put out, but people started leaving food. They'd always had a little shelf, and more food started, and more food came, because people didn't know what to do, and they knew that that was a group of people that were probably struggling more than others to get basic necessities. And the community, without any asking or any prompting, just stepped up and started dropping off food. And Kathy told me, she said, you know, I've always wanted to start a food pantry, and Kavith and I had talked about it for a long time, but this seemed like a golden opportunity to do it. And so the doggy daycare place was just across the parking lot. It was closed down. And she said, Sandra, do you think we can do this? I said, I think we need to get a health inspector in there first to find out if we can do this or not. And it turned out, just took some money, a lot of money, and they were able to turn that into a food pantry. And it was amazing. My friend Jana is sort of the manager of the pantry aspect of this, and I reached out to her yesterday, and I was trying to get numbers. She goes, Sandra, here are the numbers I have for March. In March, 939 family units visited the Westside Food Pantry and took some sort of food. 2,597 individuals in March were served.
In March.
That was Moscow City Council member Sandra Kelly speaking to the Moscow League of Women Voters today about her job as manager of the University of Idaho Volunteer Center and Vandal Food Pantry. The Idaho Board of Education voted yesterday to approve tuition increases for public colleges and universities in Idaho effective in the fall semester 2026. Students at the University of Idaho, Boise State University, and Idaho State University will face a $425 increase in tuition and fees, and Lewis Clark State College students will face a $350 increase in tuition and fees. Those increases are roughly 4.4%, reflecting the across-the-board 4% reduction in funding the legislature imposed on those institutions during fiscal year 2026. Higher education institutions in Idaho will face an additional 5% funding cut for fiscal year 2027. Lewis Clark State College Finance and Administration Vice President Chris Jones told the Lewiston Tribune he expects the institution to break even by the end of the year. Besides the increase in tuition and fees, the college has eliminated 78 academic programs and converted a campus building into student housing. Those changes should counteract some of the loss of funding, so LCSC would have a net loss of $2.8 million by the end of fiscal year 2027. University of Idaho Division of Finance and Administration Vice President Brian Foisey said the fee increase there will go toward supporting faculty promotion and tenure, personnel inflation, utility and computing costs, and the university's counseling and mental health center. The $4.1 million increase in funding, however, will not completely counter the $4.7 million funding reduction for fiscal year 2026, nor the $7.6 million net loss the university expects in public funding by fiscal year 2027. Boise State University Interim Chief Financial Officer Stacy Pearson said the $8.3 million increase in tuition and fees would be balanced against the impacts of eliminating staff and faculty positions and reducing academic and student support programs, and will go toward increased operational costs and contract inflation. Due to a net funding reduction of $11.2 million for fiscal year 2027, Boise State University is still anticipating a $5.2 million shortfall. Pearson said he hopes the university's conservative student enrollment projections will mitigate the deficit. Idaho State University Finance and University Planning Vice President Jennifer Steele in Pocatello says she expects the $4.07 million gain in revenue the institution anticipates coming from a 4.7% increase in tuition and fees will only account for a third of the budget shortfall created by this and next year's funding cuts. You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Moscow Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center, a nonprofit organization dedicated to bringing commerce and community together through business support, local events, and economic development initiatives. 114 South Main Street in downtown Moscow, 208-882-1800, and moscowchamber.com. Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Idaho Chapter and Palouse Group of the Sierra Club, which are building a grassroots movement for climate and ecological justice in Idaho. Sierra Club empowers community members of all ages to advocate for clean energy, abundant wildlife, and outdoor access. sierraclub.org/Idaho/Palouse-group.
The Latah and Whitman recovery communities offer peer support for people dealing with addiction and other behavioral health issues. Located on Main Street in both Moscow and Pullman, they have a rotating calendar of life skills and recovery support offerings and a harm reduction program that could help you save a life. Moscow also offers a 24/7 behavioral health crisis center, along with men's and women's sober housing. Most services are free or at cost.
And you're tuned in to KRFP Moscow Pullman. Filmmaker Daniel Beckerman of Canada said his film The Apprentice, which is an unflinching chronicle of the early rise of Trump in New York City real estate, was not going to be made in the U.S. Beckerman, who attended a screening of The Apprentice at the Kenworthy Theater in Moscow Monday night, said the film ended up being made in Canada with money from Canadian, Irish, and Danish investors. The independent film was released just before the 2024 presidential election, and Beckerman said pushback from Trump created difficulties finding distribution.
Basically, we struggled to get it financed, but, you know, we did what I do on every movie, scratched and clawed, and we got it together. And there was just a phenomenal group of people working on it, our heads of department, like our costume designer, our production designer, our DOP. I don't know if you guys saw Worst Person in the World or Sentimental Value, but both movies were shot by Casper Tuxen, who shot this movie. He's probably one of my favorite DPs I've worked with, and just like amazing people. Production was really a battle, really hard just to make it work and to get everything we needed. But we got it done, and then the edit, it very quickly, unusual for a movie, I started to feel very early in the edit that there was something good about it. And that was around March of 24. And we sent it to Cannes for consideration. And very quickly they accepted it into main competition, which is my first movie in the main competition of, you know, the most prestigious film festival in the world. And that was incredibly exciting. And there was a lot of buzz. Just in the film community, it seemed like the bigger, larger world hadn't really heard about it yet. But I'm not going to lie, it was exciting. It was very exciting to be in Cannes. You know, Cannes is a place where cinema is revered. And, you know, but also the idea that cinema can say something about the world and participate in a larger discussion that, you know, society's having with itself. It's a place where that idea is taken seriously. And, you know, there's a lot of anticipation. It was the day of our premiere. There were some behind-the-scenes controversies, let's say, that spilled out into the press, like, hours before our premiere. And they went in Variety magazine and started writing about it. And so, but that happened, that got published just before the premiere, and then we had it, and the reception was really good, and within minutes after the premiere, that, you know, and this is, you know, full glamour, movie glamour, you know, it's like movie stars were at our party afterwards, and it was all very exciting, but then just right away, almost right away, I remember it was Sebastian who plays Donald, obviously, showed me his phone, and there was a tweet from the campaign director, then candidate, Donald, and it was, you know, calling us like dumpster fire people or something like that, and threatening to sue any distributor who would do this, bring the movie to audiences. So that's before he was back in power. But already, you know, and this is where I realized I was actually more naive than I thought I was. That I didn't realize how quickly the industry would capitulate and just do what they're told. And impact, where companies we've been talking to, and in some cases where we actually had deals that we were working on, all of them evaporated. And some of them were very, you know, cagey and just didn't say anything about why they retracted and why they stopped, why they their interest all of a sudden, right after he said that, went away. And some of them were more honest. And some of them said, you know, someone's on our board, or some, you know, we wanted, there's a merger in our near future, and he might be the one who's approving it. So it was an eye-opener, and I thought I was savvy, but I guess it wasn't. I thought companies were more interested in making money as their primary motivation. Turns out there's a certain kind of power that makes money, that subordinates money, you know, the financial interests of a lot of companies. And that has changed how I view the industry and, I would say, how I see this country.
That was Canadian filmmaker Daniel Beckerman, who visited Moscow for a screening of his film The Apprentice, which was part of the Kino Film Festival featuring mainly Northwest films. Bickerman said The Apprentice is about the human reality of Trump and used a Wizard of Oz metaphor.
I kind of forgot, in a way, I forgot about him while I was watching. It was like they were watching the character, they knew it was him, but it didn't feel like, you know, say if you watch 2 hours of CNN or Fox News, you know, it didn't feel like that. And I think that's because, you know, I use the example of the Wizard of Oz. It's a, to me, a good metaphor. You know, Dorothy and the Tin Man and Cowardly Lion and Scarecrow go and with Toto, they get into the castle, and there is this, like, terrifying, you know, gigantic, all-powerful green face sort of giving commands to them, and it seems like there's no hope, and it's all-powerful, and then Toto pulls the curtain, and there's a little vulnerable old man trying to keep up that illusion behind the curtain. And this is much more about the vulnerable human behind the curtain, which we actually don't see because we've forgotten that it's a character that he's showing us. We've forgotten that he's a storyteller and he's telling a story about a character, and we actually would love him or otherwise. We have acclimatized to that character and treat it as if it's just, yeah, that's who he is. And forget that that's the giant green projection.
That was filmmaker Daniel Beckerman, who visited Moscow for a screening of his film The Apprentice Monday night at the Kenworthy Nonprofit Theater in downtown Moscow. Gas prices continue to climb nationwide as the war in the Middle East continues to escalate and peace talks stall. The Idaho statewide average cost of gasoline was $4.33 per gallon Tuesday, 16 cents over the national average of $4.17 per gallon, and the eighth highest in the nation. Idaho prices are still substantially lower than in Washington, where the statewide average cost of gasoline on Tuesday was $5.51 per gallon. In Lewiston, gas prices Tuesday were $4.26 per gallon, marginally lower than the statewide average, versus $4.07 1 week ago and $3.35 this time last year. In Clarkston, gas cost $4.80 per gallon, substantially below the state average. Prices in Moscow as of Tuesday were marginally above the Idaho state average, ranging in price from $4.36 at Exxon on the Troy Highway near Safeway to $4.50 per gallon at Nom Nom on the Pullman Highway near Winco. In a news release Monday, AAA Idaho Public Affairs Director Matthew Conde said the West Texas intermediate benchmark for crude is trading at about $10 more per barrel than just a week ago. A higher cost of raw materials generally leads to a more expensive finished product, in this case gasoline, diesel, even jet fuel, until some of the geopolitical conflicts are stabilized, we could be on a roller coaster ride with crude and pump prices.
Data show that more than half of the lower 48 states are currently experiencing drought, including two-thirds of the West. In Oregon, most of the state is already facing moderate to severe drought. Scientists are calling the situation historic. This winter tied 1934 as the warmest on record in Oregon, reducing the snowpack to about one-third of its normal size. Dr. Peter Glick, co-founder of the Pacific Institute, explains that there has been almost no snow in the West, and what little snow did fall melted earlier and faster than usual.
That changes the runoff regime in our rivers. We get more runoff in the winter, more flooding. We get less runoff in the spring and the summer when we really want it for agriculture and other uses. And so the soils dry out faster. Fire risk goes up.
Glick predicts that if the same conditions persist, reservoirs will be significantly depleted over the next few years. Last month ranked as the third driest ever recorded in the U.S. Shel Winkley is a meteorologist with Climate Central. He explains a warming atmosphere is able to hold more water, which leads to more severe drought as well as floods. He says for every 1 degree Fahrenheit of warming, the atmosphere can hold up to about 4% more moisture.
The result of this increased atmospheric thirst means that droughts grow longer, they can get more severe, and that trend intensifies with every little bit of warming that we continue to experience here.
Earlier this month, Oregon Governor Tina Kotek declared a drought emergency for Baker, Deschutes, and Umatilla counties, months ahead of when they were issued in the past 2 years. The emergency declarations aim to help farmers and ranchers access water resources and prepare for increased wildfire risks. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, 20% chance of showers before 8 p.m. tonight. Otherwise, mostly clear, low 40. Mostly clear Thursday through Friday, high 68 Thursday, low 43 Thursday night, and 72 for the high on Friday. Partly cloudy Friday night and Saturday, low 47, high 74. Mostly cloudy Saturday night, low 49. And sunny on Sunday, high 77. Currently 59 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. David Katz assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Flashpoints is up next. Lockdown Mosh Pits on at 7:30 here in the studio, and at 8:30, music begins in earnest with Grateful Dead Through the Decades with Arlene. Also, we have syndicated Brazilian music with Bossa Brasil coming up at 10 p.m., so stay tuned for all that. KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palouse is organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.